Now, one of the very biggest reasons that we're in this sort of sorry state is because of population growth, let's face it, and the resulting intensification that this necessitates in agriculture. But is the poor quality of soil, in turn, subsequently impacting on food quality and therefore also on our health? Grant Jackson went digging into the dirt with Reading University's John Hammond.
There's a worm.
Okay, so we've just dug up some soil here, and you can see straight away there's a huge diversity of ingredients in the soil. The soil provides a number of things, water, but also some mineral elements, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, calcium, magnesium and sulfur are the six main ones, and then there's some micronutrients that are also in there, like iron and copper and zinc, which go into really important functions in the plant.
Like what? Because I think I need calcium to make my bones stronger. So what does the plant need, say, phosphorus or nitrogen for?
Well, nitrogen's the biggest one. The plant needs that in the greatest quantity, and that goes into making things like proteins. So if we don't get enough nitrogen in the plant, then the plant can't make chlorophyll, and so the plant starts to look yellow.
How does it get from the soil, then, into the plant to make the chlorophyll and make the plant grow, ultimately?
The plants take up those nutrients from the soil solution. So it's moving water through the soil up into its roots and out through its leaves. And with that flow of water, it can bring with it some of those nutrients. And in particular, nitrogen and sulfur come through that pathway. Some of the nutrients like phosphorus and potassium, they're harder to move through the water. So they have to move through a diffusion process. So they move from a high concentration in the soil to a low concentration. So when the nutrients get to the root surface, there's a number of proteins in the root cell that then transport those nutrients.
And this ultimately enables the plant to grow from a seedling all the way up into an adult crop.
That's right.
If there are any toxins in the soil, would they be also taken up, just like the nitrogen and the phosphorus that you were talking about?
Yeah, so some heavy metals that we sometimes find in the soils can be taken up through the same process into the plant and ultimately into what we would eat.
That's not the only way you could ingest heavy metals, though. You could eat the soil itself. I know what you're thinking. I don't eat hunks of soil for dinner. But it's actually a lot more common than you think.
Usually they say about 1% of the weight of a vegetable is the soil attached to it.
I know, I was quite surprised too. 1%. That's a colleague of John's at Reading, Chris Collins. And think about it. How well do you really wash your veggies? I'm definitely guilty of not scrubbing as well as I should. So there's probably much more than 1% of my vegetable that's actually soil.
Carrots, because they're in such intimate contact with the soil, are often more contaminated than other crops where the edible portion is above. So, for example, like a tomato would be much less likely to be contaminated than a carrot.
Although that's a little hard to stomach, I can't help but think, how bad can it be? Surely our soils, and certainly the soils that are used to grow food, can't be all that polluted, right?
They're very common. Any urban area, you will find detectable levels of lead from old lead piping, lead in petrol. And you will also find elevated levels of the organic pollutants, mainly associated with transport. But also, for example, a lot of people used to put the ash from their fires into their gardens because they thought it had a nutrient value. What they didn't realise is there are some of these organic pollutants associated with those ashes.
What Chris researches is what happens when we eat this polluted soil. He took me to a lab where they're simulating the gut tract from your mouth to your anus.
Put a lab coat on.
At one end, the polluted soil goes in and is mixed with an acidic solution to recreate the conditions in the stomach. Next is the small intestines, where it's a little bit more alkaline, so the solution in the stomach jar is moved into the intestine jar, where something is added to bring that pH up to a more neutral level. The next bit is the colon, and it's where things took a turn for the worse. Oh, yeah. It's not quite as bad. I mean, it's not great. It's getting gradually worse, isn't it? What could be so bad? Well, this is where Chris takes his intestinal samples and mixes them with real human poo. Yes, you did hear me right. Hominid excrement. And it stinks.
It's like being on the farm, isn't it?
Yeah, but the worst thing is I know this is human. Whereas cows is like slightly more acceptable.
It's slightly sweeter, isn't it?
Why put yourself through hours of lab time surrounded by the sweet scent of excrement, I hear you ask? Well, to see if these pollutants are siphoned off the soil, left to float around in the gut solution, and absorbed into your body. What's known as bioaccessible.
What we're looking for is the bioaccessible fraction. So that is the amount of pollutant that is desorbed from the soil into the gut solution.
And how much is bioaccessible from your experiments here?
10 to 30% goes into the colon solution.
How much of an effect does your microbiome, these microbes in your gut and in your colon, how much of an effect do they have on how much of these pollutants you absorb?
We really don't know because that hasn't been tested. One thing we did test is whether using a polluted soil, it changed the population composition of the microflora. And actually, in the soils we used, we didn't find a significant difference between the polluted soils and a non-polluted soil.
Does it make a difference to how accessible these pollutants are?
That might be a beneficial thing. It might be that they break them down and turn them into more benign compounds. So they might hydroxylate them, for example, which makes them more water-soluble and they're more likely to be passed out.
Is there any evidence to suggest that that whole 10 or 30% is then absorbed into the blood?
Truth is, we really don't know that. There's been tests in pigs, but there's a lot of metabolism of organic compounds when they're in the body. So it's really difficult to test it.
But I suppose the danger of it being in the bloodstream is that blood goes everywhere. So
exactly.
Equally, yeah. If it's not metabolised elsewhere in your liver and excreted through your urine, it could end up in your brain or whatever.
There is some sort of secondary activity on that. So it's unlikely that the whole amount would be exposed to one particular target organ, if you like. But there is the potential.
I'm not sure how much I can stomach of it in here. I can feel myself holding my breath slightly.
It's not the most pleasant place to work. But good science.
Chris Collins, and before him, John Hammond from the University of Reading. And enjoying the aromas in the laboratory, Greg Jackson.
Not for me.